Welcome to the Yacht Rock Show with your captain, Eddie Gans, with first mate, Joe Carlisle, and Samir at the wheel. And here's your host, Eddie Gans.
Hello, my friends, and welcome aboard the Yacht Rock Show COVID number 14. Say hello to Joe Carlisle.
Hello, everybody.
Mr. Joe Carlisle.
That intro was a little redundant. How we got that twice. That was in the stone and then in the stone.
You like that? And don't forget, folks, Samir on the wheel. Redundancy. Isn't that smoking, folks? Joe, that's reflex. A killer remix from our man, Reef, the Reflex.
Yeah, I know you mentioned that.
You have to see the compliments this guy gets, Joe. I mean, he's
very talented.
Great.
They're excellent. We love them all.
Absolutely. So good. Oh, the drums, the bass kicking. Powerful. Oh, I tell you, if I was going to do remixes, that's how I would do it. Well, I've been saying that. I love this guy. We got to meet him, Joe.
Yeah, where is he?
We'll get him on the show.
He's British?
I think he is.
Yeah, I remember. I vaguely remember that.
Yeah, I think so. So, folks, we've got a slamming show for you, right, Joe? Should we tell them who we got?
Oh, go ahead. Yeah, coming up in a little while, maybe like a half hour from now?
something like that, hopefully around, So we've got an Oscar winner, folks. That's right. This is really cool.
And we almost had two Oscar winners.
That's true. This is Mr. Frankie Previtt is who I'm talking about. And the name, if it doesn't ring a bell, well, he used to be with Frankie and the Knockouts. Huge hit in 1981, Sweetheart.
Yeah, we play that a lot.
Couple of hits that he had. Sweetheart, and the other, Not Another Lonely Night. Love it, love it.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And there's
one.
Another one.
Previewing that today.
That's right. And Frankie started off. He has an interesting beginning. We're definitely going to get into that later.
Yeah,
and
we'll
he's an
dive
Oscar
into
winner.
It later.
Yeah. So we're not going to waste any time. We're going to get started right now. We're going to do something by Mr. Rupert Holmes, and this is called Him. Song, it's the only song that has
it's
a.
Sad.
The idea, right? You mean the words of it, but
yeah, he's like catching or cheating or something.
Yeah, but I love the fact that he does his solo. Isn't that cool, man?
And weren't you saying that this was done? This was covered in Spanish somehow.
Yeah, this song was covered by a very big, Latin singer. His name was Jose Jose that recently passed away.
And it went like this. Hing, 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 what you gonna do about hing? That's how it went.
No. It didn't go. That is funny. No, okay. But I think it goes el. Que vamos a hacer con él. It's funny. Oh my God.
When did he do that? It was relatively recently, last 10 years or so?
No, he did it back when this song was a hit.
Oh, is that right?
Bro, but you remember this song was huge.
I don't remember this song. I mean, I know it now because you've been playing it since we started doing the show.
Right.
And I had not heard it before then, I swear.
Well, number one, it's on the boat, and it was huge. I remember back in the day, in high school, people would make fun of it. They would say, "What a stupid song!" You know, him.
Roger Newsphere. Was that before or after the Answering Machine song, which really is stupid?
Well, yeah, I tell you, it's funny. The other day on Twitter, I was talking with somebody back and forth, and somebody asked me about that song, and I said it's a song that you either love it or hate it. And I'm on the fence with that Answering Machine. It's kind of
strange.
Quirky. Strange, yeah.
That's what they were going for, I'm sure. And it
exactly.
is. They succeeded. It's quirky.
All right, so let's move on. Here's our good friend from Dr. Hook. Take it away.
Hi, this is Dennis LeCourier of Dr. Hook. And I'm here with your Captain Eddie Gans. He's the one with the sailor hat and the weird tattoo. Right here on the Yacht Rock Show.
One more lonely night for me. I looked up
can make it smoother. We can make it longer, stronger. We've got the Smoothology. Better than before. It's the Yacht Rock Show with Eddie and Joe.
Beer for the best time of the day, Miller High Life.
This is Yacht Rock.
Hi, this is Dave Jenkins.
Hi, this is Corey Larius from Pablo Cruz.
Here with your host, Eddie Gans. We're playing the biggest hits of the 70s and 80s just for you.
Next up, what you gonna do when she says goodbye? What you gonna do
What the hell was that? I was hearing pings and dings. I feel like I'm in the hold of a submarine. We don't usually play the ID that has the song that we're about to play on it, but we did it tonight.
What was? Yeah, that's right.
Oh, there are more sounds. Extraneous sounds.
There's another sound
we don't like.
It's the anchor drop. The anchor has dropped.
This is
an interesting song, Joe. Check this out.
What does that sound familiar?
That nice? That is from Jack Wagner.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It was sent in by Vincent Ryan. Thanks, Vincent, for sending this in. And he wants to know if it floats the boat or not. And I'll tell you, just the songwriters alone, Joe, very impressive.
Yeah, tell me about it.
David Foster, Jay Graydon, Steve Kipner, and Donny Osmond.
Oh, my goodness.
Isn't that crazy?
Well, who producers knew that Donny Osmond knew David Foster and Jay Graydon? How'd they get him?
Oh, bro. Are you kidding? Come on. These guys are all hooked up. Yeah. Glenn Ballard, Cliff Magnus, producers. Very good guys.
Wow, how could they miss
it? I'm loving
that?
This.
And it wasn't
right?
A hit, so that's strange. How could they
It did. It peaked at number 52 on the Hot 100.
Okay, what year? 88?
Yeah. No, 85. Oh. Yeah. Ooh. Oh, I like that.
You didn't preview it? You didn't hear it before?
Nope. Ooh.
Yeah, he had that weird. What was that other weird song he had?
All I Need.
Yeah, All I Need.
Yeah, All I Need is definitely not yet. But this, I'm hearing some jazzy things. Little Al Jarreau. Al Jarreau could have done this. Oh, yeah.
What did Donny Osmond do, you think? You think he wrote the lyrics?
Interesting. I don't know. He co-wrote the song.
Hmm.
Ooh, I like that. That's a nice change there. The hands of all of that precious time I let slip by. Definitely hear the
I hear a little Kenny Loggins there when he wisps a little bit.
Yeah. Right here.
Anyway.
Watch.
Isn't it a shame Donny Osmond didn't sing it?
I know.
Jack Wagner was just trying to tap into that. He wanted to be like a triple threat. Actor, singer, dancer.
Yeah, true. There's a jazzy, you hear it? Slight.
Yeah,
just enough.
It's certainly not the most complex version.
No.
Yeah, but with Jay Graydon and Foster involved, you always get something like that thrown in.
You got that right.
Weird extensions on the chord and stuff.
This is an interesting bridge. Watch. Oh, yeah. I love that. Right? I hear the Foster and the Graydon. Absolutely.
If it was an instrumental, I'd say it was more up my alley. Because I'm not a fan of Jack Wagner's voice and what he's doing.
But I'll tell you, for being an actor, he pulled it off, Joe.
He did. Yeah, I'm not going to take that away.
Yeah. No. Oh, I love that. Yeah. But let me tell you, I say it's got it just enough, Joe. I could have heard Al Jarreau singing this, right?
Okay, yeah.
So, of course, Jack Wagner singing it, you're kind of like, eh. But it's got just enough to get on the boat. I give it 2.5 anchors, and that floats the boat.
Good.
And, folks, we will also... What was I going to say? No, if you want to get... We will get to other songs. Sorry about that. We're going to get...
That's called a brain fart, ladies and gentlemen. Eddie will be returning with us momentarily. Okay, what were you gonna say? Sorry.
It cracked me up. So, no, I'm just saying, folks, if we haven't gotten to your song yet, we will. The list is long, but I promise you we will get to it. And the easiest way to get it to us is send it to the Yacht Rock Show at gmail.com. So, as promised, right, Joey?
Go ahead.
We're going to feature Mr. Frankie Previtt. That's Frankie from Frankie and the Knockouts, folks.
Yeah. You know the song. We play it all the time.
Oh, we love this. Don't get me started.
Yeah.
I love this song. Right, Joe?
Yeah, and right following Sweetheart,
we start our interview with Mr. Frankie Previtt. Sit back, relax, grab a cold one, and enjoy, folks. All right? And Joe and I will catch you on the next Yacht Rock Show.
Strong.
Okay.
All right, go ahead, Ed. Start.
All right. Hey, folks. We have a special guest today on the Yacht Rock Show. I love this guy. He's one of the sweetest guys I've ever met. Great singer. And he's an Oscar winner. I got to throw that in because it's so true. Yeah. And it's awesome. I'm talking about Frankie Previtt from Frankie and the Knockouts. Frankie, how you doing?
Hey, Frank.
Hey, babe.
How are you?
I was beginning to think you were a figment of Eddie's imagination. He's been promising you for months and months.
This is so long overdue. So long overdue. We're going to do the Christmas version. Yeah, we're going to start now. It'll come out at Christmas.
It's so funny. Samir,
of course I did.
Samir, the engineer, was saying, Eddie, didn't you already do an interview with Frankie? I said, no, bro.
Yeah, he was just remembering the IDs because you gave us so many great IDs.
I did do a bunch of IDs for you guys.
And you know what? There's one that's really, really cool. The one that says, hey, Eddie Gantz, play one of my songs. I've been using that a lot.
Yeah,
I got Bill Champlin to do it.
Awesome.
I got Dennis LeCourier from Dr. Hook.
Nice.
I got him. Yeah, I got him to do it too. But listen, I want to get started. So let's go back, bro. Let's go back. Before Frankie and the Knockouts, you sang with a heavy metal band. Is that true?
Well, I don't want to call them heavy metal. We used to call it riff rock. And it was a band called
Riff Rock.
Riff Rock, because we would play, you know, we would play these riffs. And then I would put these melodies over these riffs. And so somebody said, what kind of music is that? I said, riff rock. And that just kind of stuck. And that band
you
was
coined
named
the term. Of,
it was Bull Engus. That was the name of the band. It was on Mercury Records back in the 70s. We toured, believe it or not, we toured. That band was together for about, I don't know, 5-6 months, just woodshedding, writing song after song. And we did a couple of gigs. And this guy found us in Columbus, Ohio, who was Ken Franklin. He owned a label, ATI. And it wasn't a label. It was a booking agency. And he turned us on to this guy who produced us. And we put out a record. We did a record in 1 week. And we were playing Red Hook High School. And he called me up. And Vinny goes, okay, you ready for this? I said, what's up, Vinny? He goes, you're Red Hook High School tonight. Yeah. Next Saturday, you're opening for Rod Stewart at the Garden. And you're going on tour with him.
Whoa.
So we opened for Rod Stewart. But not only was Rod Stewart on that bill, there was a band called Cactus on that bill. And Cactus was, believe it or not, the reincarnation of the Vanilla Fudge, if you remember that band.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, of course.
And so Cactus was, let's see, the drummer, Carmine Apathy, the bass player, right. Timmy McCarty.
Tim Bogart.
Jimmy McCarty from the Detroit Wheels was on guitar, and Rusty Day was the lead singer. And that band kicked ass.
Wow.
And so we came on, we riff rocked, Cactus came on and kicked ass, and Rod Stewart just kicked soccer balls off the stage,
now
had the audience
mean,
in the palm of his hand.
Does that mean that Rod Stewart actually picked you after hearing the band, or was that not how that worked?
No, but, you know, it was ATI was, you know, the guy that owned that that particular agency. Booked Rod Stewart, Deep Purple, Fleetwood Mac, everybody.
Right.
And so when he discovered us, it was like, okay, this is my band. I'm going to break this band. I'm going to put him on tour with Stewart. Then I'm going to put him on tour with Deep Purple. Then I'm going to put him in the Pocono Mountain Festival, and they're going to play with 300,000 people. And we just kept on, like, you know, doing gigs that he was, like, putting us in from nowhere. All six of us lived in a farmhouse in Rhinebeck, New York, outside of Woodstock. And we just, you know, we get high and rehearse every day. That was our life.
Nice.
Yeah.
Now, Frankie, when you write, what do you write on? Are you a guitar player, a piano player?
Actually, I am a vocalist. And my dad was an opera singer. So when I write, the thing that comes to me the easiest really is melody. And so I write with either a guitar player or a keyboard player. And in the case of Time in My Life, a bass player. And so they, you know, we sit down and we start coming up with changes and grooves, and I start jamming melodies. And then if the chord change goes to a place where I don't hear the melody going, I'll say, John, stop playing when it hits the chorus. Let me just sing. And then I just start singing. And he goes, this chord? Right. No. Put a 7. Put a 9 in that chord. Yeah, you know, yeah. And then we find the chord that works good with the melody, or somebody will send me a track. In the case of Hungry Eyes and Time of My Life, it was a track. And me just going, jamming to the track, listening to the music, going, nah, 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 I'm of my life. Nah, 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 I'm of my life. So I'm singing, I'm jamming, and these phonetic sounds come out of me that right. are the seed or the lyrics sometime of a song, nah, 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 I'm of my life. You know, what the hell am I saying?
Yeah, like scrambled eggs. Wasn't Paul McCartney said that yesterday was scrambled eggs or something like that?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
same process.
Yes. Exactly.
Scrambled eggs. That is funny. So oddly from Bull enough, Angus, go ahead. Okay. So wait a minute. So from Bull Angus, you went Frankie and the Knockouts. How did that come about?
Now, so Bull Angus, you know, after the second record was over, we were back in the studio writing, you know, trying to get more songs. And the guy, Vinny Testa, and Jeff Franklin had an argument. And Jeff, that's his first name is Jeff. And they had this argument. And all of a sudden, we got dropped off of Mercury. And it was like, oh shit, well, you know, we don't have a deal anymore. And so I moved back home at New Brunswick. And my parents said, take the apartment downstairs. They had a two-family house. So I lived downstairs with me and my dog and a mattress and a Showman amp. And my parents, I would go upstairs and I would have dinner. And then they would give me $25 to take voice lessons so I wouldn't have to join a cover band. I started selling cars out of my driveway just to earn money to be able to, you know, just write songs. And then there was this girl I was dating back in college. And I bumped into her and she goes, I'm married to R. Cast. And I said, ooh. R. Cast was the president of Buddha Records.
That's right. So,
and I'm like, oh, really? She goes, he's my husband. And I'm going to tell him all about you. And I said, great. So I'm waiting. And all of a sudden she goes, listen, Art wants to talk to you. So I talked to Art and he goes, listen, I want you to go to see Tony Camillo. And Tony Camillo produces Gladys Knight, Frida Payne, all these groups that are on his label. And he goes, if he says you're any good, I'm going to give you a deal because I couldn't tell you if you're any good or not. And I know my wife is, you know, you're good friends with my wife. So I'm going to do you a solid. I'm going to let him hear you. So I met Tony Camillo. I started chirping. And Tony goes, give this guy a record deal. Give this guy awesome. A record deal. I know he's singing hard rock, but he can croon. This guy can chirp. So, you know, they gave me a record deal. Anytime I wrote a rock song, it went in Tony's draw. I wrote an R&B song. We recorded it. So we did about maybe 9 or 10 songs that never got released. But I wasn't really getting the vibe from the R&B thing because I came out of a rock and roll band. It wasn't kicking my ass the same way. And so I just said, you know, I called up the guitar player from Bull Angus, Billy Elworthy. And I said, Billy, why don't you what are you doing? He goes, I'm playing with Cherry Vanilla in Manhattan. I said, why don't you get your ass into New Brunswick and let's write some songs together. So he came down and we started writing songs. I said, let's do something. Let's do like a blue-eyed soul rock and roll thing. Let me sing this R&B thing and let's write some rock and roll chords.
Awesome.
Give me some crunch and let me chirp over top of it. So we wrote about 4 or 5 songs and we're, you know, continued to write. I, you know, continued to try to get a record deal. And I ran into this guy named Bert Padell, who was called the accountant of the stars. And he had Madonna. He was an accountant for Madonna and Luther Vandross just a bunch of different people. And I said, you know, here he goes, I don't know the first thing about music, but give me your tape. I'll send it out. He did in 3 weeks what I couldn't do in 2 years. You know, damn. I got a call from Jimmy Einer and he said, come in. I like your voice. I like your songs. I went in there and I sat there with him and he goes, you got a band? Of course, it was me and Billy. And of course, I got a band. Yeah, man, I got a band. No, right. No problem, man. He goes, you write three more songs as good as these, and I'm giving you a record deal. So I went back, and Billy hooked me up with this guy, keyboard player, Blake Levinson, who was playing with what was the name of that girl he was playing with? He was in another band, Another Pretty Face. Remember that band from back in the day? They were like a Bowie kind of band. Oh, and so he starts playing, and we wrote three more songs. And I go in, I wrote She's a Runner. I wrote Annie Goes Hollywood. You know, a couple of two, three songs that were on our first record. And he gives us a record deal. And I'm like, okay, now I got to get some guys and you know, put a band together and go record. So I call up some of the guys that I play with, do demos with, and we go in the studio. And as we're going in the studio, I wrote a song called Sweetheart. Ooh. And I went into Jimmy and I said, you know, I got one more song, man. And I play him Sweetheart. And he goes, listen, I'm not going to tell you it's not a good song, but it's a pop song. And you want to be a rock and roll band. You sure you want to put that bullet in the gun? And I said, load it. I said, we'll deal with it later.
Wow.
So, yeah. So we record Sweetheart. But we got pegged by radio as like a cutesy pop band. And then when we go out and play, we play all, you know, these other songs from the record. And people are like, who the hell are these guys?
Yeah, who are these guys?
And then all of a sudden we play Sweetheart. Oh, that's who these guys are. And we were out, you know, we were out with bands that we shouldn't even been playing with, like Marshall Tucker. Imagine this.
Oh,
like,
my God.
Six Italians and Marshall Tucker. So I got a bunch of like yeehaws in the audience grabbing their groin, giving me the finger, you know.
Right.
But, you know, we were the first band to record and film for MTV at the Garden State Arts Center. And Marshall Tucker was the band that we opened for. And I can just remember all those cameras on me and these cowboy hats in front of me giving me the finger.
Oh, man.
And me grabbing my joint and like, here I am, baby.
Yeah. Was it really Six Italians, the band? Frankie and the Knockouts?
Well, you know, there was at least four.
Forget about Frankie and the Knockouts. It should have been Frankie and the second generation Italian Americans.
That's it. The Italian Americans.
I was in bands like that. It was all Italian.
Hey, Joe, you nailed it. You said that Frankie was Italian, right? Brevite.
Yeah, I know it's Brevite or something like that, right?
Brevite.
And my mother was a Stellatelle.
Where were they from? What part of Italy?
My father was a Sicilian.
Oh.
And I believe my mother was Calabrese.
Oh, wow.
Calabrian?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
So, bro, that groove from Sweetheart, who came up with that? That's funky, man. I love that song.
You know, Billy came up with that 3-4 groove. And then Blake came in and went, no, here, you should go here. You should go to this change. And he thought the song was a cutesy pop song. He goes, listen, man, I'll give you those changes for free. I don't want anything. Don't even put my name on this. I go, okay.
Wow.
I know.
My God. That song, I tell you, that song is genius. I love, bro, yeah, I don't get tired of that song.
We never get tired of playing that song.
But
you know,
so cool.
Check out, you know, when we did our third record, which was on MCA, you know, I thought that I should write a song in that same feel and try to replicate another Sweetheart. So if you go to Making the Point, which is our third record.
I know that album, sure.
Right. It's on a compilation called the Complete Collection, Frankie Knockouts Complete Collection.
Right.
And so on that record, it's the same feel. It's in 6/8. And instead of Tico playing drums on it, we had just finished getting off tour with Toto. And so that's Jeff Pecora on drums on that tune.
Oh, I'm going to be playing that sucker. Oh, what's the name of that song?
It's called Come Rain or Shine.
Oh, yeah. I know that. That song is yacht rock.
Yep.
It's certified yacht. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a great one. That's a great tune.
Frankie, let me tell you the coolest piece of trivia that I found out while I was checking out stuff about Sweetheart was that you guys did Fridays. Remember that Saturday Night Live?
Let me tell you about that. So after the record's over, there is no band. Everybody goes on their own way. And we signed with this guy, Michael Kleffner, who was like a radio guy from Atlantic Records. And he also managed a couple bands. One of those bands was the Jefferson Starship. He calls me up and he goes, "Previtt, listen to Fridays tonight." He goes, "One of my other bands is on." And I go, "Okay." So I'm watching the show, and at the end, Larry David comes out and he goes, "And
that's what I was
going to
say. I couldn't believe it was Larry David.
Next week's special guest, Frankie and the Knockouts." And I'm like, "Oh shit, there's no band." You know? So Michael calls, he goes, What do you think? And I go, "Michael, I gotta tell you something. There's no band." He goes, "You better have a band by next Friday because you're live on television."
That's crazy.
So Friday night, we did Fridays. Saturday, we did American Bandstand. Sunday, we did Solid Gold.
And
a week later, we were on tour with the Beach Boys for a month.
Wait a minute. Hey, who was on Solid Gold? Dionne Warwick?
Yep. Dionne Warwick.
Oh, that's great.
That's great. A hell of a star. That's a hell of a star for a band.
I thought it was so cool that it was Larry David that introduced you guys on the clip that I saw on YouTube. I was like, "Oh, wait a minute. That's Larry David."
It is. It is. And Madeline Kahn was the guest star show that night. And Kramer, what's his name? Richards.
Michael Richards.
Michael Richards. One of my favorite comedic actors was also one of the main comedic actors on that show.
Yeah, that's how he knew him, so he can hire him for Seinfeld.
Absolutely.
So, Frankie, so you guys were signed to Boardwalk Records, am I right?
No, Millennium.
Millennium. Now, did that belong to Neil Bogart?
Well, Jimmy Einer used to work with Neil Bogart with Casablanca.
That's right.
And then he went on his own. And he got a deal with RCA, and he started his own label. Chilliwack was on that label. Check Chilliwack out.
We love them.
Yeah, one of our favorites.
You know, from Canada. They were on the label. McLean, you know, with American Pie was on that label. Don McLean. Another guy, Tommy James, was on that label.
Sure.
So you know, there was a lot of good acts. Jimmy had a great pop ear because Jimmy Einer produced the Raspberries, produced Three Dog Night, produced John Lennon, produced Lighthouse, produced Grand Funk Railroad. He was a guy that had great ears.
So, bro, let me ask you: back then, did you hate disco or did you embrace it? Tell me about that. What did you think of disco music?
You can't hate all, you know, there's good disco and there's shitty disco, you know.
That's true.
You know, just like there's good pop music and you know, like crappy pop music. So in any aspect, if it's done well, produced well, it's a good written song, you embrace it, you know. I go out with a gal, Lisa Sherman, who has a disco connection. So when she plays out, I didn't realize how many disco songs I like. Until you hear him now and go, "Oh man, it's a great song."
What did you think of Barry White?
Barry White. Let's see.
Barry White.
Oh, Barry White. Okay. I thought Barry was great. You know,
because I hear similarities of the groove in Sweetheart to Barry's music. The groove. I'm talking about
somebody
the drum
take Eddie's
groove.
Temperature. He might have COVID. I don't hear that at all.
You don't hear that at all, bro.
No,
I hear a funky groove in Sweetheart. Am I right or wrong?
Well, you know, it's more in that 6/8 shuffle groove. So
it's not really the thing.
Come on.
But you're in 3/4. You're in 3/4. So it's not, you know, isn't a syncopated thing. It's just a different groove. I don't consider Sweetheart funky, but I consider it a rhythmic groove.
Do you consider it R&B? A little R&B.
Absolutely. It has R&B roots.
Thank you. That's what I meant to say.
Okay. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, melodically, yeah, melodically, because of, you know, how I sing and some of the blue notes I hit in it,
right,
are definitely R&B.
So, bro, how did it feel? The first single was Sweetheart, am I right or no?
Correct, correct.
How did it feel, bro? It went top 10, right?
Yes, it did.
How did that feel, to hear that on the radio the first time? Tell us.
Well, you know, I'm a kid that lived on 342 Livingston Avenue in New Brunswick in like a two-bedroom house. My dream was one day to hear myself on the radio. And so roll the windows down, baby. I'm coming down Livingston Avenue. And,
wow.
You know, listening to that song, I'm chirping, I'm singing. And it was awesome. The best feeling in the world. You know, it's your first child.
Wow, my God. It's great.
What's that? Wait, 81? 1981?
81.
81, yeah. 1981.
And then there was three singles off of that album. Am I right?
After that, they did... I wanted, and Jimmy wanted, a song called She's a Runner, which is a great song. And they put, and RCA was like, no, we got to follow this up with another pop song. So they put out You're My Girl. I like the song.
You're My Girl.
Yep, yeah.
It's a good one, it's a good one.
Yep, they put out that as the second single. Went top 20. Then the second record came out, and that single was a really good song called Without You, Not Another Lonely Night.
Oh.
That was a really good song.
What a gorgeous song. Oh, love it.
Yeah, and now if you look at the Frankie & Knockouts complete collection, I put 6 live tracks on that collection. One of those live tracks is Without You. Sweetheart, Never Had It Better, Just What I Want. So there's some live Frankie and the Knockout tracks with Tico playing drums on it that really kick ass. It's worth checking out.
I love Never Had It Better is slamming. Was that a single?
No, they never wanted to pick a harder rock song for us because we had a connection with radio with this other pop groove. And so what they would do is they would get the Z100s to play a Sweetheart and Without You. And then they would go to 101.5 WNEW. And then they would play Comeback and Just What I Want. And so they split us with, you know, the FM stations, you know, some AOR and then some pop.
I love the cover of Below the Belt. Who came up with that cover? It's really interesting. I love it.
I found an old postcard, and I said, this has got to be our cover.
I love it. And
I showed it to them, and they said, okay, well, you know, so we're going to have a artist come in, and we're going to draw a cartoon characters of the band. And they must have like had a guy that thought I was hung a whole lot different. And so, man, it looks like I got like a sock in my pants. This guy drew a picture of me and, you know, Lisa. I'm like,
that's right,
man.
that's true, Joe. You know what he's talking about, right, Joe?
We actually heard that Frankie paid that guy off to draw that like that.
I did. I'm still paying him. I'm on an endowment with him.
Oh my God!
So listen. Eddie made a correlation. He said that there was a similarity with what'd you say before?
Only the groove for Sweetheart, you mean?
Right. But you know what I do here? You know what common thread I do here? I do hear like your generation of Jersey guys in you. There's a common thread in Frankie and the Knockouts. I do hear like a Southside Johnny. I do hear a little Bruce. You know, even though Bon Jovi was like 10 years your junior in that generation, I do hear like common threads. What is it about that Jersey, like that South Jersey, or, you know, you were like New Brunswick is like mid-Jersey. Were you guys doing the circuit? Were you doing a circuit? You guys all had the same kind of influences? Like, why do I hear a common thread with all the Jersey guys with that generation?
You know, that's an interesting, view. Bruce and Southside were really, you know, Asbury Park guys. I never really played the club circuit. You know, I did play when I was younger, when I was in my 20s at a place called Mrs. J's, which was turned into be the Stone Pony many, many years later.
Oh, okay.
And then I used to play at a place called the Sunshine Inn, which was this other place up the street from Mrs. J's that like national acts played when Bull Angus became popular. But then John, I remember John Bon Jovi following my band around and coming up to me and going, "You're my favorite singer, man. You're like, wow, man, you're so cool." And then he would come back and hang with us in the dressing room. So many, many years later, I met his road manager like a year ago in a restaurant. And I'm talking to him. He goes, "You know when we used to come around and watch you guys all the time?" I'm going, "Yeah." I'm thinking he's going to say, "Oh, you guys were great. I love the way you sing. You know why we were coming there?" And I'm going, "Yeah, why, man?" He goes, "Because we were trying to – John was trying to steal Tico." I'm like, "What?"
Oh, yeah. Which he eventually did somehow.
And he did.
Well, you know, we finished up the third record, and Jimmy sold us to MCA. And Jimmy Einer closed up Millennium, sold us to MCA. And MCA was like, "We want to make you sound like Night Ranger." And I said, "Why would you do that?" And they go, "Well, we just think you should sound more like Night Ranger." I said, "But you have Night Ranger on your label." So they brought Night Ranger's producer in, and he mixed a track called Outrageous. And they put it out as a single, and radio said, "Nah, this is not Frankie and I, because we're not playing this." And they dropped us. But during that time, Tico went home. He finished recording out in L.A. Bill Schnee was the original producer, who was unbelievable. You know, Michael Jackson and Toto and just tons of people. 11-time Grammy-nominated producer. And so Tico goes home. And he calls me. He goes, "And there's this kid, I don't know, Bon Jovi something. He wants me to do some demos. I can make a few bucks. You mind if I do it?" I said, "Go, man. Go make a few bucks." So Tico's still making a few bucks.
Yeah, really.
You know?
Well, let me tell you, Joe brought up something interesting about the singing, but like Bruce Springsteen and all those guys. But let me tell you, the song Not Another Lonely Night, the vocal performance in there is incredible. I mean, it's balls to the wall. Springsteen could never do that song, okay?
Yeah, well, you know there's, I mean? There's a difference. I'm a crooner, you know. I come from an Italian background. My dad was an opera singer, so I was always fighting those Italian notes. But I used to sing on a street corner with, you know, a cappella stuff and me and four black guys, and I would have a group called Frankie Love and the Intruders back when I was in high school and stuff. So I was always looking for the blue notes, and I was a crooner, where, you know, Bruce Springsteen is a rock and roller, you know.
It's right.
He has that,
right,
that gravelly telling the story, you know, talking to, you know, blue collar. He's just a, you know, what can I say about Bruce? He's a phenomenon, you know, phenomenal songwriter, a prodigy. You know, so there's not many Bruce Springs in the world, you know, and we all wish we could write like that. But the rest of us have to work at it. I'm sure he works at it, but it just comes to him, you know, and he connects.
Seems to.
Yeah, it comes to him where I got to bust ass, you know, to write my lyrics. I'm writing and rewriting and rewriting and rewriting. But, you know, I've been very blessed. I can, you know, I have no complaints.
Same. And let's talk about that. So then after Frankie and the Knockouts dissolve, right?
Right.
Tell us about Dirty Dancing. How did that come about?
So, you know, MCA drops us. Tico's with Bon Jovi, and I'm back home. I'm back home in that apartment with selling cars out of my driveway again for about 2 years. So from 1965, 85, 86, and now beginning of 87, Jimmy Einer, you know, president of Millennium, calls me out of the blue. And he goes, "Listen, Frankie, listen, I got this little movie I'm working on. I know you know I went into the film industry."
Little movie.
Yeah, and he goes, I'd like you to try to write a song for the last scene. I mean, they can't find a song that they like. And I said, "Jimmy, I'm really too busy, man. I'm trying to get a deal. MCA dropped us." He goes, "Make time. This is going to change your life." I go, "Dude, you did that 2 years ago. You did that 2 years ago when you shut your label." He goes, "No, I got a good feeling about this song, man." And I said, "Well, all right. Tell me what the name of the movie is." And he goes, "Dirty Dancing." I put my hand on my forehead. And I went, "Jesus Christ, Jimmy's doing porn, you know." And I'm thinking,
porn.
Yeah, Dirty Dance. I'm thinking the guy's doing porn. And he goes,
"It does
no,
sound
no,
like
no.
a porn."
I said, "Didn't he?" He said, "Listen, write the song. I'm telling you, it's a good little movie. So he gives me an idea. Johnny meets baby, and the father doesn't like the kid. And he goes, so that's the good news. You're going to write a song. The bad news is it's for the last scene, and it has to be 7 minutes long. I'm like, I'm thinking MacArthur Park. I got to write MacArthur Park.
That's funny.
I called John DeNicola up, and who I wrote Hungry Eyes with for a Frankie and the Knockouts record that never happened. And he goes, I said, John, we got a chance to write a song here for a movie. It's called Dirty Dancing. I said, so it's got to be 7 minutes. Start the song like as a ballad with the chorus up front, and then hit the verse, double time it. So he sends me a track. I'm on the Garden State Parkway, exit 140. I pay the toll in Union, and I put the cassette into my dashboard. And the song comes on, and I'm jamming with a little cassette, and I'm going, na-na-na-na-na of my life, na-na-na-na of my life. And I'm scribbling Time of My Life on an envelope, and really the man upstairs wrote the song, because I would have never wrote that song. That was not in my wheelhouse to write. It wasn't a groove or a style of music that was part of who I am. But amazing. For some reason, that song came out of me. And that's why it's like a lottery ticket.
Yeah, that first phrase, now come on, right there, you're hooked.
Yeah, it's, but the check it out. So when I meet Patrick Swayze at the Academy Awards, he's like, I need to talk to you. I said, what's up, Patrick? I need to know who sang the demo. And I go, why is that so important? He goes, because we had listened to 149 songs, and we didn't like any of them. And we filmed that a sequence. And so we were getting ready to film that day, and we didn't have a song. We had rehearsed that scene to a Lionel Richie track. He goes, a good song, but it wasn't an original. And so we were like, let's get this movie over with. This is going to suck. And they go, wait a minute, we got one more cassette, hold on. And they walk in and they play Time of My Life, and they all looked at each other and went, we're making a movie to that song. And he says, at the end of the day, he goes, we looked at each other and went, oh my Christ, what just happened? What a great ending. He goes, who sang the demo? And I said, I did, with Rochelle Capelli. And he goes, well, I got to tell you, we never got over hearing your tenor voice. Even when we heard Bill Medley sing it, we were like, where's Frankie? And even Eleanor Bergstein, who wrote the movie, said to me, my favorite version. I said, how can you even come close to the iconic Bill Medley's voice? I said, it's such an honor to have Bill Medley sing Time of My Life.
Now, the elephant in the room, why didn't you sing it? Yeah.
Well,
why didn't they take yours?
Because I was told I was going to sing Hungry Eyes, and I had already booked the power station to go record it. And so they were like looking for, you know, maybe a hit, somebody that was already that could connect with the 60s, like a Bill Medley. That could be a contemporary voice with a contemporary song that would, you know, kind of fill the gap between the 60s and a modern song. And it was genius that they did that.
I agree. You're right.
And then the girl that sang on it was Jennifer Warren.
Jennifer Warren.
And she had sung on another Academy Award winning song with Joe Cocker, Up Where We Belong.
Right.
Oh,
right.
That's right.
I'm an officer and a gentleman.
Excellent. Right. Excellent song.
Killer song. So she already had that mojo of singing
that's
on
true.
An Academy Award winning songs. And then Bill Medley said, I don't want to do any more duets. I'm done with duets. And they said, no, you got one more in you, brother. You got to sing this song. He goes, how am I going to sing? He goes, I can't sing that. So listen to that guy. I can't hit those notes. They said, Bill, drop it an octave. Oh, now I've heard the time of my life. Okay. So he just took me in the key of E and dropped it an octave, and you have Time of My
Very
Life.
Clever. Very clever. Unbelievable.
Based on that win, were you then tapped eventually from, you know, producers who wanted to copycat that win and have you and John write some more stuff for them? I mean, how often did that happen after your win?
interesting question, because before the win, I got sounded by Samuel Goldwyn, who puts on the Academy Awards. Whoa. And he was doing a movie called Mystic Pizza, which was the first movie by Julia Roberts. And he said to me, I want you to write a song for my movie. And I want you to go negotiate with our musical director now. And I said, well, listen, I'd rather wait until after the Academy Awards. And he goes, well, I'd rather you do it now so we can get you locked up. And I said, nah. I said, I'm all excited about this. I'll do it the next day or 2 days later.
If you win, your quote goes up.
Oh, big time. Big time. So after the win, I go there and I sit with the guy. And I won't say his name. And he goes, so we want you to write a song. I wrote a song called These Are the Times to Remember. And which Billy Joel has a similar title, but this is a different song.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Different song. So listen to the
These
end of
These Are the Times.
Right. So this is a different song. And they, the guy says to me, you know, how much do you want to write the song? I had no idea what to say. And I said, you know, $25,000. I said some stupid number. And he goes, listen, I manage Barry Mann, and he doesn't get $25,000. And I said, well, then you're doing a shitty job. You know, if he can't get $25,000 with who he is, Barry Mann he's got at least 30 number one hits under his belt. So they gave me the $25,000. I wrote the song. And we went in and recorded the song, and the demo came out so good that they used the demo for the movie. And the girl that sang on it came in, and she just winged it. And she, like, in one or two takes, was like, oh, that's good enough. Okay, you can go home. They used her version, and she won some kind of an award for that vocal. And she always wanted to re-sing it because she didn't think she did it that well. So check that movie out at the end. It's called These Are the Times to Remember. It's actually a very, very good song.
So, Frankie, guess who I was emailing today? We almost had him on as a special guest.
Who's that?
John DeNicola.
Oh, really? Actually, you know, John has an album out now.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I was checking him out too.
Yeah, he has an album. He recorded like 10 of his favorite songs that he's ever written. And four of them are songs that we wrote together. And so he took the songs, and he's not a singer. You know, he's never really sang on a record. And all of a sudden, he found his singing voice. And now he has Hungry Eyes out as a single. And it's charting.
Really?
It's actually doing okay. And the song the song before that was a song that he and I wrote for a song called Avenging Angelo, which was in a movie with Sylvester Stallone and Zorba the Greek. Who's Zorba the Greek? Anthony Quinn.
Anthony Quinn, that's right.
Right. And so they star in the movie. And basically, thank you for that. I got a little whisper over my shoulder. Who was Anthony Quinn? You know, that song, that movie, they had called me and said, you know, we want a song that sounds like a David Gray song called something Babylon. It was called Babylon.
Yeah, Babylon.
And so I wrote two songs, one with John and one with my cousin Dusty McCallie. And they couldn't figure out which one they liked better, so they put both songs in the movie. And so John took the one I wrote with him, and he put that out as his first single. And now he has his second single out, which is Hungry Eyes. It's doing great.
So Eric Carmen, how did he end up singing Hungry Thighs?
Hungry Thighs. So I got a call from Emil Ardolino, who was the director of Dirty Dancing. And he said to me, listen, I would like you to come in. There's another scene that I want you to write a song for. So I'm sitting there, and he goes, you know what? They're having a real hard time connecting the BPMs to the demo. I said, what are you talking about? I'm recording the song Monday. He goes, oh, you didn't find out. You didn't hear. I said, hear what? He goes, well, Don Summers, I think they have RCA got a new president. And one of his first signings was Eric Carmen. And he said, this song is a hit record. And, you know, Frankie's a good singer and stuff, but Eric is a little more popular. So Frankie, you're out. And Eric Carmen, you're in. And I said, that's okay. I'm good with that. But just, you know, I'm a little embarrassed because I got a studio time. I got the band back together. I'm rehearsed and ready to go. And their answer was, just be happy you got a song in a movie. And I go, well, you know, okay, I'm happy, but I'm not happy, you know.
And of course.
It would have been a nice double whammy for me because, you know, it would have been – I could have had Frankie the Knockouts back. You know, I could have been out there rocking again. But, you know, I was like 40 years old at that point.
Right.
And so, thank God I'm a gabados, which is a thickhead. And I wasn't giving up. You know, I wasn't giving up.
So, bro, walk us through. This is something Joe and I have been. Oh, my God. First of all, the Oscar, where is it kept?
I was just
going to
ask that question.
I'm looking at my manager right now. It's in my house. It is sitting on like a little table that's up against the wall that has the Academy Award. I also won that year.
It's holding up the couch.
Yeah, exactly. it's like one of those couch tables, but it's up against the wall. Yeah. Next to it is something I'm very, very proud of. ASCAP Song of the Year. It means the most played song.
That's right. Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, most played song in the world. And then next to that is my Golden Globe and then my Grammy nomination. Yeah,
let's not forget the Golden Globe.
Yeah, above it, I met Patrick Swayze, called me up, and he was doing a charity event. And he said, why don't you come down and hang with me? So I had these two records that RCA gave me that were paintings of the first album and the second album. And I walk in and I have the two of those records in my hand. And he goes, oh, man, look at those. I never got one of those. I said, you did now. And I handed him one of the records.
He said,
you got to sign this for me. So I signed one record and I said, now you got to sign this for me. So he signed it, and it's in a beautiful little case with the original lyrics next to it, and it's above the Academy Award.
Wow. So, bro, you know, let me ask you.
If you peel some of the gold away from the top of the head of the Academy Award, there's chocolate in there, you know.
Chocolate.
There's chocolate in there.
That's a chocolate. Heavy chocolate.
Bro, how did it – so you're at the Oscars – walk me and Joe through this. You're there. When you got invited, did you freak out?
Well, the nomination
comes
first.
I'm not a freak out guy, but I was, you know, it was beyond my dream. I mean, my dream was to ride down Livingston Avenue and hear my song on the radio. So to one day.
Everything after that is gravy.
I was over the top, you know, it was way beyond my dream. And so, you know, we're at the Golden Globes, and Jimmy says to me, I want you to like really, really be respectful. I want you to really, you know, be up there and have your speech and be very refined. And he goes, because it's kind of the prerequisite, you know, the Golden Globes, the Academy Award. So they're going to have their eyes on you. I said, okay. So we did that. And I remember Sammy Davis giving me my Golden Globe. And then we got nominated. And so I took my parents. And my mom and dad sat left and right of me, and they sat us in the middle of the row, and they sat John kind of toward the end of the row with Don Markowitz. And I said, guys, listen to me. You know, if they call us up there, please don't run up there because they're going to start the clock on us, and I'm in the middle of the row. And by the time I get out of there, you're going to have like 20 seconds gone. And of course, you know, and the winners, you know, Frankie Parade and John DiNicolo, they run up there. And I'm like, oh, man. So I'm trying to get out of the row. I float up there. I don't even remember getting up there.
Yeah.
And out of my mouth goes, I remember a phone call I got from a guy saying that I should write a song for a little movie called Dirty Dancing. It was going to change my life. And I want to thank Jimmy Iovine for changing my life. And that's how I started my speech. Yeah.
Wow. So how many times have you watched that on YouTube when you guys received that?
You know what? I haven't watched it for years and years and years.
Yeah.
And recently, during an interview, a Zoom interview, somebody played it. And I was like, no way. And, you know, I looked at that mustache I had. I was like, you know, Captain Guido.
Now, in 1988, unless somebody taped it for you, you couldn't see that until YouTube, right? Did you actually somebody tape that for you? Did you see it at the time?
A couple of relatives taped it for me, yes. On DVRs or whatever they were called back then.
No, back then, you had VCR.
VCR, that's it. That's it.
Did you think you were going to win? Honestly, did you think you were going to win when you were at the Oscars? When you were sitting there, did you think, man, maybe we got a chance? Or what was going through your mind, if you can remember?
Yeah, you're up against Diane Warren, right? I mean, who else was in that category?
Yeah, I went to Russia with her as one of the songwriters in a songwriting summit. Her and Barry Mann, Mike Stoller, Desmond Child.
That's right.
Anyway, I'm there, and my father and mother sitting left and right of me. All the songs go by. My father looks at me and goes, you're going to win.
Wow.
And I go, Dad, do not put the Maloiki on me. Do not do that to me. You know,
Maloiki. So, he's from Sicily. You said he probably threatened somebody. That's how you won.
That's how I got the award. What are you kidding me?
Right.
So
I have to tell you that I envisioned, and I'm not saying this to be pompous, but I envisioned myself on that stage.
Wow.
Yeah, that's half of it.
And I'm not saying I would have been shocked if we didn't win, but I saw myself on that stage. I really did. Yeah, it's true. Yeah,
I'll tell you, man, you are truly, truly blessed. Truly.
Oh, big time. Big time.
Unbelievable. It's so awesome, bro. It's so awesome, I'm telling you. Really.
Yeah, it
but
is.
I'll tell you, that song is so clever. The way it's written, the melody is beautiful. I mean, every time I hear it, you know, I always think of you, and I go, "Kishing now I."
Baby's got pair of shoes.
Right? Is it still? What's the story with that song now? Is it still playing a lot? And you're still seeing a lot of money from it? What's the story?
Well, you know, it's a song that became an iconic song. So, you know, where it lives today, besides the movies that it's in, it's in several movies, but it lives in sync licenseville. And what that means is it means synchronization licenses and commercials. Like Sandals has used it for 19 years as their theme song.
Oh, yeah,
and then you have other major commercials like United Healthcare and Mercedes-Benz in England. So these sync licenses are the lifeblood of a songwriter, because you can't depend on the royalties of airplay anymore, because streaming has made royalties almost non-existent to a songwriter. But they're fractions.
That's terrible.
You know, per play, it's a fraction of a penny. You know, so if you're a songwriter nowadays and you write a hit record and you got 1 million streams, you made like $300.
My God.
Yeah, so it's a different world. I'm very blessed, over the top blessed.
Wow. So let's talk about One World.
Yeah, you know what? This I just mentioned something to you guys in reference to a songwriting summit. And that, after the Academy Awards, a guy named Roy Allen Scott came up to me, and he said, I have this company that I put together with BMI and Columbia Records, and we are picking 25 American songwriters to represent the United States to do the first ever songwriting summit in Moscow. And it was right toward Glasnost, which was the opening up of the Soviet Communist Party and embracing other countries. And so they said, okay, bring your songwriters to Russia and you'll write with the top 25 Russian songwriters. And so they picked Barry Mann. They picked Mike Stoller. They picked Diane Warren. They picked Desmond Child, Cindy Lauper, Michael Bolton. 25 of us went to Russia. And for 9 days in this huge hotel right across the street from the Kremlin, there was 50 of us. And so we had to pick the songwriter, the Russian songwriter, to write with, and with interpreters. And so we were listening to all their music, and their music was much different than what we were used to hearing. You know, we're used to like syncopation and a little bit of funky grooves, and right. and theirs was a little more regimented. And we're like, okay, okay. And then in walks this blind Estonian with this other guy, Mick Targa, and they sit him down at the piano, and nobody told this guy that he wasn't Ray Charles. He sat down, or someone like you, and we were like, oh, who is that? And everybody was like, we want to write with him. He's the guy we want to write with. And they were like, well, you all can't write with him. So we're going to throw everybody's name in a hat, and you're going to pick a person you're going to write a song with. And my hand goes into the hat, and out comes Sergei Manoukian, the blind Estonian.
Oh, my God.
Yes. Talk about a role.
Jesus. And
so now I'm with him and this other girl, Pamela Philip Olin, who was a songwriter who wrote songs for Frank Sinatra, Whitney Houston. She wrote songs for Respect. Come on.
Aretha.
Aretha. Tons of people. And so she becomes the other American writer, and we're writing with these two Estonian songwriters. And, you know, back then there was no pandemic. Back then there was racism, but not to the visibility of the racial injustice that we just saw. And so this song, One World, was written because of a common thread language, which was called music. Speaks louder than words. And so as these two country men and women got together, the music spoke to us, and we created a song called One World, that we all live in one world. We all wake up and we all see the same sun rise, you know, at different times, but we're all looking at the same sun. And so that song was born. And when we got home, there were 50 songs written by all these songwriters in 9 days. Columbia picked 10 songs. Uh-huh. And out of those 10 songs, I lucked out again. I got two out of the 10. Yeah. And Earth, Wind, and Fire covered one world. And the other one was covered by Cyndi Lauper, that I co-wrote with her in Russia. And so, so I'm, you know, the song, I'm waiting for the song to come out, and Columbia Records and went through an upheaval, and they changed all of the staff, and the new staff was like, well, you know, that's the old staff's project, and we're going to kind of like put it out, but we're not going to put it out. We're going to just like print up 5,000 copies and throw it in a corner. So One World never happened. None of those songs that some of the greatest songwriters that I can in my lifetime wrote some incredible songs, and the album's called Music Speaks Louder Than Words. You can see it on YouTube. And some great singers, American iconic singers, Roberta Flack sang on it. And so many, many years later, I'm doing radio interviews like 2-3 months ago, and we're talking about, you know, how music is being affected by the pandemic and how American songwriters, I said, dude, wait a minute. It's not only affecting Americans. It's affecting the world. This is a one world thing. Right. And the light bulb went off, and I went, holy shit, what did I just say? And so I called, and I was like, let me find out if Earth, Wind, and Fire wants to, you know, get behind it, or let me find out. So I couldn't get a hold of anybody, and I called up Pamela, and I just said, listen, I got an idea. A lot of my friends are like fighting to pay their rent, their electric bill, their phone bill, and they're musicians. And I don't know what the other side of normal is going to be when this is over. And I found some charities. One is called the Musicians Foundation. Another one's called the Actors Fund. A third one is called the First Responders Children's Fund. And I said, I want to put out a record. I want to put out One World. And she goes, well, I know somebody we could re-record it with. And I said, great. So she hooked me up with this guy, John Gilliton. And John Gilliton wrote New Attitude for Patti LaBelle.
I wrote a new attitude.
Yeah, he wrote that song and won a Grammy for it. And basically, he started putting a track together, and I said, send me a track and throw a vocal on it so I can go out and try to get, you know, the Bruno Marses and the Cindys and all these like major stars to do a We Are the World. Right. And I was having a hard time getting people because they were all committed to other projects already. And so John Gilliton starts to get people just to do the demo, and he gets this guy Michael Mayer, who's the lead singer with Herbie Hancock. And then he gets this guy named Ellis Hall, who was the original lead singer for Tower of Power.
Oh, nice.
And then he gets Renee Martin, this other girl who played on everybody's record and toured with everybody. And then another one was Judith Hill. And she was in 20 Feet from Stardom, which was a movie about backup singers back in the day. And she also was on The Voice, and she was like one of the finalists. You check out One World, the video, she does the bridge. She comes in the bridge. This girl smokes.
Really?
She's really a good singer. So he starts sending me these singers in the track, and I'm like, maybe we don't need like stars. These people are as good or better. And these are all unsung heroes. They're doing it for pro bono. They're doing it to help their fellow, you know, mankind. And so I started getting a little momentum of people saying, you know what, this is a cool thing you're doing. This is really a cool thing. So I started a website called OneWorldOurSong.com. And so if you go to that website and you see, you know, right before I was getting ready to release it, this social injustice thing happened with George Floyd. And we had this Black Tuesday, I believe it was, where the world stopped, all media stopped. And so we said, we're not going to release. We're not going to release the song. And it gave me a chance to really take a breath and think about what I was doing with these charities. And I realized the picture I was painting wasn't completed. And I started thinking about what needed to be done. So I called up the NAACP, and they became our fourth charity. And so if you go to our website and you click on the Musicians Fund, and you'll go to a website and you donate a dollar, whatever you can afford, and you get a free download. I'm giving the song away.
Nice.
You know,
nice.
And the sync license fees, which is the gift that keeps on giving. I told the charities, whoever comes up with a major commercial like a United Airlines or McDonald's, I'll give you the sync license. I said, for 19 years, Sandals has been, you know, giving me money to play my song in their advertisements. This song in a United Airlines will be the gift that keeps on giving for you.
Wow.
So I'm giving that away as well. Please, people, go out, listen to One World. It is for a great cause. You think about all the different charities that I'm trying to give to are part of our future. What would the world be without music? What would the world be without going to theater and actors and movies? What would it be like without children? And how great would it be if we could get this social injustice straightened out? You know, so those are my charities. I'm really passionate about it. I did a video. The video's really good. Ryan Ward helped me with the video. He produced it for me. It is a really cool little video. And we're on Facebook. Our World, One World, Our Song is our Facebook. And Instagram, One World, Our Song. You know, so please, you know, it's a good cause.
And it's on our page on Facebook, on the Yacht Rock Show page, folks. You can check it out there.
Yeah, you know, help us to help others, you know. Help us to heal
absolutely.
Us. That's it.
Well, thank you for sharing that, brother, with us. We appreciate
You're
that.
You're welcome. Eddie, thank you for letting me have my voice here.
We love you, brother. Love you.
Thank you.
Listen, when things get better, don't forget, we're going to do the Cube, and me and Joe, we're going to take you out when things get normalized again.
We got to do it.
All right, brother. Okay, man. So listen, I'm going to say ciao. Thank you so much.
Eddie
Thanks
and Joe,
time,
thank
Frankie.
You.
Okay,
thank
man.
You
for thank
having
you,
me, Frankie.
Guys.
All right, bro. Have a good night.
Stay safe. Bye-bye.
Thank you, too.